Hey, it's a local spotlight show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host today. And today I have three locals in today, and we're talking about someone that's passed away. He passed away in 2011. He was 62 years old, but very famous person. They're in the studio today to talk about Tom Rohde. It was a classmate of theirs. You guys graduated in 67?
Right.
Yes. And Tom was a famous percussionist. He played or recorded with over 50 famous artists from 1975 to 1989. Some of them, Art Garfunkel, Roy Orbison, Tom Jones, Wayne Newton, The Supremes, Nitty Gritty Band, James Taylor, Randy Travis, Joan Baez, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Alabama, Reba, Aretha Franklin, and the list goes on and on and on, all these famous people. And anyway, these guys are here in studio to reminisce a little bit about Tom. First of all, Bob, you graduated with Tom. Tell us a little bit what you know.
Well, I met Tom mainly in my junior year because he was in football, but he always came back to band after football season. He was our percussionist and drummer, did not play in the marching band. And in his junior year, senior year it would have been in 67, he played King Arthur in Camelot, and I was in the musical with him at that time.
Yeah.
And we did a road trip to go pick up the costumes over in St. Louis, and my mom had a 40 Conline, and we took that over there. It was quite the trip, and that's the first time I'd ever taken a road trip with Tom. We picked the costumes up, and I noticed him eyeing the van. And his mother came in the dry cleaners not too long after that and says, "Well, you convinced my son of what he wants for graduation." And I go, "What's that?" And she says, "We just ordered him a brand new 67 40 Conline fan to haul his drums around."
Oh, okay.
He got a scholarship, and he's turned it down to go play drums, percussions. He always corrected me if I say, "Well, who are you playing drums for?" He'd say, "I don't play drums. I'm a percussionist."
And you said he got a scholarship in football.
Right.
As a kicker.
I don't know which school. Yeah, as a kicker.
Yeah.
As a kicker.
So his
mother did not know about this, if this was good or not. And I says, "Tom is so good." She said, "Yeah, I have to listen to him. He doesn't stop playing at high school. All that stuff's up in these rooms." And he says, "And we can't soundproof that room."
Now, his mom.
That was mom.
His mom, she owned the White Spot.
She owned the White Spot. That was the hangout.
And, it was it?
And the White Spot, White Spot probably back in the 50s, had a big round table in a corner. And that's where we all went into after basketball games, football games. That's where we all hung out at. And Ramona was quite known throughout the town. She had the best onion rings and coleslaw.
Yes, she did.
But she did not know that her son was as good as he turned out to be as a percussionist.
Did you think he was that good?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Don Kempling, the band instructor.
He knew he was good.
He knew he was that good.
Okay. Now, Wayne Schell. Wayne,
yeah.
Tell us about your when did you meet Tom?
I met Tom somewhere, I think, around 1967. And I can't say for sure where we met, but we did become friends pretty quickly. And I would go over to his house. He lived on State Street across from the high school. And he'd always say, "Wayne, I got a new record for you to listen to." And so he was always, I don't know how I found out, but he always knew who was going to be the new hot act. And I was, just to give you a kind of a list, like he played for me the first Blood, Sweat, and Tears album. That was 1968. He played Chicago Transit Authority, which eventually became Chicago, 1969. And these were records. And so he would, when a new record and a new band was come out, he'd share that with me, and we'd listen to it. And usually in the summertime, because I was away at school, but in the summertime, I lived on South State Street. He lived on North State Street. So I would walk. He had a car and I didn't. I would walk out my front door and just stand on the street and wait till he drove by. Then when he drove by, he'd pull over and I'd get in. And we would just drive back up and down State Street for the whole night, listening to music on the radio. And then later on, we got into, you know, 8-track tapes.
Yeah.
And so he had a car later that had 8-track tapes. But during those early years, we were listening to the radio station St. Louis. I think it was KXOK or whatever that played, whatever was playing the pop music of the time. And so we got to be really friends. I would go with him. He was playing in a band called the Syndicate of Soul. I would go with him, help him carry his gear, and just kind of be his roadie a little bit. I was not very far advanced as a musician myself at that time. I was just getting started. But he was so positive and so friendly. And really, everybody loved this guy.
Yeah.
He just had a bubbly personality. And every picture we've got here shows him smiling. I don't think I ever had a disagreement with him of any kind. He was just so easy to get along with. Yeah. And
How about Mike Zipprick? How about you? What was your experience with Tom? How'd you meet him?
Well, I'm a Hoonie. I'm from Calhoun.
Yeah, I knew you're from Calhoun. So
I graduated in December of '65, and I got to play in a band with him, a guy from Carrollton and a guy from Eldred, and then Tom played the drums. And that's how I met him. We rehearsed over here at the house, and so I got to meet him that way, and we played some gigs. And then I left in January to go to Quincy.
What was the name of your band? You remember?
The Features.
was it like rock and roll?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Louie Louie and Money and You Can't Sit Down and all that Beatles songs and stuff. But anyway, I just played saxophone and just kind of did chord work. I was like on the side. You know?
Yeah.
But I stayed in touch with Tom over the years and especially with Wayne. Wayne's a great guy and just meeting this fellow here, a wonderful guy. But I stayed with him through the 70s, 80s, 90s, and I lived in Florida most of my life, and I learned about Roadie's Rules about the music business from him.
Oh, yeah? Roadie's Rules?
Yes.
Okay. What was his rules?
I passed them on to many people. Four rules. Number one, write your own songs. Be a songwriter and try to get a publisher.
Always be a songwriter.
Well, that's one way. When you can be a songwriter and sing your own songs and try to be an actor on your own. That's number one. Number two is be good on your acts, he said. Be a studio musician. Number three.
What do you mean, good on your acts? Go ahead.
Your instrument. Like, be a studio musician. The number three is
be okay, so what, anyway, on the second rule. Yeah. Whatever instrument you're playing, you need to master that. That's what he would say.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
He'd say master that. Yeah. Because I've heard you guys, I don't know if you've said this during the recording or not, but he didn't want to be called a drummer.
Yeah.
Is that right?
After he left here, yes.
Yeah,
he was a percussionist.
Percussionist.
Okay. And he would play a lot of different percussion-type instruments, I suppose.
Yeah, there was. That's a separate niche, you could say, for percussion. There's just a whole lot more variety than just a regular drum kit.
Right.
He was the first one that I know of here in town, like in the 60s, 66, 65. He started buying congos, bongos,
okay,
percussion instruments instead of just a drum set.
Yeah, all these pictures.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, now the second rule, get to master your instrument, right, whatever
good,
instrument.
Good on your axe, yeah.
Okay, and what's the third rule?
Third rule was, I'm getting Alzheimer's. The third rule is get with somebody that's already established. And at that time, this was December of 77, me and, I think she's since passed. Anyway, we visited her, Ramona and Tom at his house, and I was looking to do something myself in the music business. Anyway, the Roadie's Rules, the third one is get with somebody that's already established. And at that time, he was with Paul Anka. So the fourth
Okay, he was when he was telling these rules, he was already established.
Oh yeah, oh, top of the game, yeah, top of the line.
Okay.
So number four is get with some other people in the band, have a band. Like if we be on the same page, you want to play like, you know, weddings and VFWs, Legion halls and clubs and bars. But you want to get into the next level of being a touring band. That's number four. Then you get out there, you get known, and then with a well-known act, then you get known, you get a record deal on your own. So that was, and pretty much that's still the same way, you know.
You know, and these four rules, but these rules came later on as when he was already established.
This was his wisdom of the business.
Yeah, of just being in the business.
Yes, yes.
I got
hard-learned experience.
Wayne, and you took a trip with.
Yeah,
with Tom, didn't you?
Yeah, I remember it was in 1971. I graduated from college, and I came back to Jerseyville. I'd gone to college in Quincy, and I came back to Jerseyville, and Tom was still living here or in the area because he did eventually move to St. Louis. But then he just came to me and said he wanted to go out to the West and see. He said he wanted to go to Jackson Hole, and he wanted to see the Rocky Mountains and the Grand Tetons, and he just offered me an opportunity to travel with him out west for 2 weeks. And I was just like a poor kid. I had no money at all. He paid for everything.
No kidding.
Yeah, and we just drove out there in his vehicle and listened to music on the way. And I think we actually, it's a little hard for me to imagine this, but I think we camped out for most of it, like when we were like up in the mountains and stuff. And it was a great, great experience. And so my father had just died, and I came back, and just Tom was just especially kind to me and good to me. So
yeah, hey, if you're just joining us, I have Wayne Schell, Bob Hunter, and Mike Ziprich all in studio reminiscing about a famous percussionist, Tom Rohde. On that trip, you guys were gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
yeah. And so I guess, you know, living, riding.
it was just mainly sightseeing. I mean, and listening to music in his car.
You guys probably came pretty close.
Yeah, we got to be really close.
And you played.
Yeah.
Did you play music with him in the?
I used to play with him in his house here in Jerseyville. I would go over to his house with my guitar, and he'd have his drum kit, and we'd sit in his living room and play together.
Did he teach you anything about music?
Oh yeah, he was always somebody that I could watch and see, you know, how it's really done by a good professional.
Yeah. How do you imagine, how did he break through? How did he become such a percussionist to play for over 50 superstar artists?
I can speak to that. It was kind of a step-by-step, because he played in a local band called the Syndicate of Soul in Alton. They had two singers. This would have been his high school days still.
Okay.
And then he went to St. Louis because he was in college there, and he went to Flow Valley Community College, and somehow he auditioned or he met this various musicians there, and he got a job with Phil Driscoll, who was playing at the Chase Park Plaza. So he played with Phil Driscoll, and Phil Driscoll was a pretty big local act at that time. And then I would say that was his next step up the ladder. And then somehow, like Bob said, that Paul Anka came to St. Louis and heard Phil Driscoll and then picked up Rohde.
And saw Rohde, or heard Rohde, and said, hey, this guy's got talent, just a natural talent.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, Bob, you got to reunite with Tom in 2009 when he was back in town. Tell us about that.
Well, he was back in town for my cousin's funeral, and we got to sit and talk afterwards. And I was asking him, are you still out on the road? And he said, not as much as I used to be. He said, I likened down in Tennessee. He would have probably been 58, around in there. This was not long before he passed away, because I was really shocked when I heard about it. He said, it's so neat. He says, I've gone into the recording studios with all these famous artists, and he didn't. He just, a few of them is all he ever said. He loved James Taylor. I did know that.
Yeah.
And
I do, too. I always loved James Taylor.
He says, now, he says, with the computer and the internet and everything, he says, these guys write a song. They put the guitars, they put the bass to it, then they send it to me, and over the internet, I listen to it, and I put the percussion to it, and then I send it back to them. And then when everybody's done, then they send me a finished song over the internet. He says they've kind of eliminated the studio with the internet.
I see.
And he says that means if you've got somebody established in California or New York, you can still be on their album without having to travel there to be in the studio with them.
I see. Yeah. Now, Mike, you were talking, mentioned something about Stan Sinclair. You got involved with him and Stan Sinclair. You got some?
Sure. And I think if I could just read a real quick letter that I wrote to Tom's widow. And
this was after he passed?
Yes.
Okay. And what did Tom die from? What happened?
He had a heart attack, which kind of run in the DNA, but he was also diagnosed right before he left on this tour with stomach cancer.
Okay. And so what happened? Can you tell us a story about him passing?
What I heard from a friend that went to the funeral, that he said that when Tom got done with this tour, he was going to start working on his stomach cancer and whatever that the doctor had him do for that. But like Glenn said, his dad had had a bad heart his whole life, and that's kind of, Tom inherited the bad heart. So the treatments back in those days there, Glenn says, I don't even know if his heart would have even put up with it. But he had already promised that he would be on this tour.
Tour, okay.
And he said after he got back from the tour, then he was going to deal with his stomach cancer, and his heart took him instead.
Okay, so did he pass out or die in a hospital?
No, he was on tour with Ricky Skaggs during the Christmas. It was Ricky would always do a big Christmas tour.
Yeah.
And it was the very first night for them to perform, and they went to the venue and found that he had died on the bus. So he didn't even get to play the first night.
I'll be darned. All right. Mike, you said you had a letter that you...
Yeah, it kind of sums up his character and his positive attitude and his wisdom. And his attitude is... I've heard it said... I mentioned one time, I said, this guy, he was down in Nashville. I said, well, I guess it's about maybe 50% attitude and 50% talent. He said, no. Or he said, it's all attitude. And he's the in the Hall of Fame of positive people. I'll read it real quick. It's I mail it to Melanie. I said, we never met, but I still have you and Tom's picture from December of 2009 Christmas. I knew Tom over the years, going back to playing in a band with him in 65. I lived in Florida most of my life, but I now live in Jerseyville, where Tom is from. I've gotten to know Stan Sinclair over the past several years. He owns a Sinclair grocery store in town. For Stan, his younger brother Jim was a close friend of Tom's. I recently listened to Stan give a presentation to the Jersey County Historical Society at the annual meeting. The Historical Society has a large Victorian-style house at the north end of the town close to the high school. It contains a lot of Jersey County memorabilia. After talking with Stan and showing him a great-looking promo glossy photo of Tom playing percussion, I donated it to the Historical Society. I had mentioned to Stan also that when I had visited Tom over the years, I'd seen the gold and platinum albums that he had. I told Stan that possibly Tom's widow may want to donate them to the Jersey County Historical Society. He thought that that would be wonderful, so that's why I'm writing this letter. The albums could be placed on a wall area at the Historical Society with his pictures and a bio. I believe that Tom is a proof positive that a person can make it a career in the music business and not lose his soul. I believe that a lot of young people who maybe do not know the extent of Tom's success would be inspired by his example when they read and view his display. If you want to donate the albums, here's the address. Jersey County Historical Society, attention, Stan Sinclair, 601 North State Street, Jerseyville. If you decide to do this, let me know the cost of a postage package and I will reimburse you. All the best to you, Mike. And then we got a response back.
from his widow?
Yeah, she sent it to Stan. She says, "Hello, Stan. I got a message from Mike asking about mementos from Tom Rohde's collection. I'm sorry to tell you, now I no longer have any of these items. Too many years have passed, too much travels living in the Caribbean and selling of his estate. Truly sorry, Mel Rohde." And like I say, this is a couple years ago. This
right.
Wonderful guy. Just
yeah. Was he a pretty wealthy guy?
I think when he was growing up, it seemed like he was an only child.
Uh-huh.
So, and his parents had split up fairly early. And I think his dad was in insurance. I think his dad pretty well.
I just didn't know if he made good money in the music business.
Oh, you mean working
business,
for himself?
In the music business, yeah.
I think he did. I think he did pretty well in the business. He would often kind of say, "Gosh, I've got to keep working because I've got so many bills." So yeah. I think I think even when you're making good money, you can be spending good money too. So.
Yes. Bob, any last comments about your relationship?
Yes. Seeing the pictures here, which I haven't seen before, and even through high school and afterwards, I never did see Tom get mad.
Yeah.
He was always, I don't know whether you put it, a jolly person, but he always had this huge smile. Even when Mrs. Corkin would yell at him because he didn't get a part right with King Arthur. He played King Arthur in Camelot, you know, and he played the part perfect. He looked like the excellent king, but he'd just laugh at Mrs. Corkin when she'd correct him. And yeah. That's just the way that I always knew him. I never knew him to get mad or, you know, anything like that. And he had the best smile.
Yes. He did.
Well, does anybody have any last words to say?
There's one other thing. I remember once he moved to Nashville, a lot of these people that he recorded with was when he was living there because he made a lot of connections there. And there was a group that was big at the time, and this was in the area of technical advancement of percussion, because eventually it became electronic. So there was a drum. Tom was involved in the creation of something called the Zen drum. So this was an electronic percussion instrument, and the guy that worked with him with it was in Bela Fleck's band. This guy that they call Future Man, who is Roy Wooten. So he and Tom were close together in developing this electronic percussion instrument, the Zen drum.
Well, hey, believe it or not, we ran out of time. But thanks so much for coming in. Mike, Bob, and Wayne, and reminiscing about Tom Rohde. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Man. Are we all there?